Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators, a podcast with marketing and business tips and strategy specifically for freelance translators and interpreters. I'm your host, Tess Whitty, a longtime freelance translator with an education and professional background in marketing. Tune in to hear tips from my own experience or from other translators and industry experts. Hello and welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators. I am so glad you're tuning in today. I want to give a shout out to all the loyal listeners who have reached out to me through email and leaving review, etc. There's always a link to leave a review in the show notes too. So today we're going to talk about a topic that I hope we will not have to experience anytime soon, but if we're in the business for the long run, we will inevitably will sometime. This topic is how to survive an economic downturn. So what if your freelance earnings took a 50% dip for 6 months? Would you be able to weather this storm? Or what if you lost most of your income for a year or so? With me today, I have an interpreter and a translator from Mexico who has weathered these storms before and will share his tips on how to prepare and go through this with our freelance business intact. So I want to extend a big welcome to Mario Padilla.
Hi, Tess. How are you?
Welcome, Mario. How are
you today? Much, Steph. I'm okay. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming onto the call. So first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and your career in translation.
Well, I started out here in my city, in Veracruz, Mexico. Mm-hmm. It's like the biggest port in Mexico. It's on the Gulf of Mexico. Mm. And we used to have a pretty big business tourism industry. We had a lot of conferences and we had a beautiful venue for conferences. It's actually dubbed as a World Trade Center.
Okay.
And this was between the 2000 and 2015.
Okay.
That was the time that I just, I started out because someone called me. I used to teach English in college. Uh-huh. I'm an accountant.
Okay.
When I was teaching English, someone called because there was a conference that was in English and they needed interpreters. Mm-hmm. And so I went and I have never thought about interpreting, much less simultaneous interpreting. I didn't even know the concept, you know.
How did you learn English?
Oh, that's another story. I've always loved comic books and games and fantasy books, and that's the way I learned English. The first time I did an interpreting job, I remember the event pretty well. It was a benchmarking conference. Back then, it was in vogue. When companies trade processes, you know. And I went with another guy. Mm-hmm. The guy was supposedly a seasoned interpreter, but he couldn't do some parts. And it fell on me doing most of it. And I felt great because it was like the first time in my life that I felt that I was good at something, you know.
So was that consecutive or simultaneous?
No, simultaneous.
Wow.
Simultaneous in a booth.
Okay.
Yeah. And so some people heard me. They were listening to the translation. Mm-hmm. And offers started coming and started to work as a simultaneous interpreter.
Okay.
Then I thought about creating a small company that was, the idea was to teach English corporately, like training courses in companies.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't pan out. Then we tried to have a school that didn't pan out either. So it fell on simultaneous interpreting only. But I had a great business here in Veracruz. I actually didn't have to do anything. It was all word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that I just sat every day and waited for offers to come. And there was always an event every month, you know, or three events, you know. That.
So you were not listed anywhere?
Oh, no, not at all. I wasn't listed. I actually didn't have a degree as an interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
No formal training at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I was well known among the DMCs here in Veracruz, the tourism service providers.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys hired me for conferences. There were plenty of conferences in English in Veracruz, especially medical conferences, technical conferences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for almost 15 years, I did that. And I had a small website that promoted my work. I obviously formalized my business, you know, taxation, invoices.
Mm-hmm.
The corporate part was well cemented. But besides that, marketing wise, I did nothing. It was all word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
The way I started, in fact, my friends, and actually I usually don't like working. So my friends saw me as the guy that spent his time at a coffee shop. And I was actually making a very good living
mm-hmm.
with two or three events because, simultaneous interpreting is very well paid, and I didn't know that, but I was actually charging twice what most interpreters charge in Mexico, because whenever they hired me, they didn't have to pay for travel expenses. So I was allowed to charge much more than interpreters from the center of, you know, Mexico is a very centralized country. You know, it happens in Mexico City. I'll tell you about that later. But
so how did you know what to charge then?
I started out with what they told me they mm-hmm. would pay me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started raising that. And then I fell on, obviously, as in every business, and that's very, very important for every freelancer. You have your working conditions very well set forth in your quote.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to do that. I learned that every setback that I faced, I wrote it down in the quote as a condition, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started, both things starting to be important for me, setting forth the conditions. For example, when you work industrial, because sometimes I do work industrial, it's very different. The environment is completely different than a conference in a conference room.
Mm.
You have to. It's even difficult to go inside industries. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have to fulfill certain requirements. Sometimes you have to even take safety courses for that. So that must be charged, you
mm-hmm.
know, because time. So I actually changed my time instead of charging for interpreting time, I changed it for availability time
mm-hmm.
Because of those reasons. So several things that I started learning, but I was actually working in isolation. I was working by myself here in Veracruz, and that's the way I started. You know, that was my first 5 years.
So yeah. what happened in to the, if you had, I mean, it sounds like it went really well, and you didn't have to market yourself, and you could charge well. What happened? What
yeah,
in Veracruz and to the events and to the market?
Yeah, fast forward 10 years. I started work, because when clients came to Veracruz, they met me and they wanted me to work with them. Mm-hmm. So I started to meet foreign clients that took me to other places to work with them. Mm-hmm. For example, I had the pleasure of working with Deepak Chopra, for example.
Wow.
To Veracruz. And actually, that's a very fun story, because I was handling the whole thing and they expected like 200 people, and suddenly 600, 700 people showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have receivers for them all.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to step on the stage with him. Mm-hmm. And apparently that was he liked the way we solved the problem.
Okay.
And I worked with him and at one of his seminars in Chopra Center. But all those came from events in Veracruz.
Yes.
And again, word of mouth.
Yes.
I have clients that I've done their annual events for years. For example, Coldwell Banker here in Mexico, they do their annual event.
Mm-hmm.
Done it for 15 years. But that's because they came to Veracruz, they met me, and they wanted me to keep doing their interpreting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as I said again, no marketing at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to think about that, mm-hmm. you know?
But then something happened in 2016.
Something happened in 2016, yeah. I was working for government a lot, because the government in Veracruz sponsored many events. But suddenly, you know, just as an example, remember this terrible thing that happened in Tunisia in 2015? There mm-hmm. was an attack in a beach. And, mm-hmm. and this is an island that relies entirely on tourism. And overnight, the tourism industry was completely decimated there.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what happened in Veracruz. One day, bodies were dropped in a very public place in the city.
Mm-hmm.
This was an event that was in the news worldwide. Everyone knew Veracruz because of the bodies.
Mm.
So overnight, events were canceled, big events.
Mm-hmm.
Our World Trade Center, a year later, they lost the World Trade Center name.
Really?
Events stopped coming to Veracruz, and I ran out of business, basically. My revenue was shot, and I had my clients that I had for years, but that wasn't enough.
Yes.
I had to do something, and I wasn't prepared. I just wasn't prepared for something like that. And there are places that are very vulnerable to those events. And my business at that time was very geographically centered in Veracruz,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was a mistake, obviously. That was a big mistake. And but I was happy because I had like a monopoly here in a
mm-hmm,
very
mm-hmm.
in a very nice tourism industry, you know. So but there was something that saved me, yeah.
So what did you do?
Here, as I said, I do Coldwell Banker events. And there's also another guy that came to Veracruz, gave a conference, liked my work, and started taking me to other places. And these guys work in sales. These guys are sales and marketing gurus. One of them is Tom Ferry.
Mm-hmm.
He's real estate guru.
Mm-hmm.
And Barry Waldron, he's not as well known, but he gives negotiation and sales seminars. You can find them online. They are, in fact, Tom Ferry has a podcast. He has a YouTube channel. And
do you mean that you started teaching yourself sales?
Actually, because of their seminars, that's something that happens when you're an interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that you will start learning things that there are some events that I would pay to go that I actually go and interpret, and they are very interesting, you know, and these seminars with
I would parents, pay to go interpret for Deepak Chopra for sure. Yeah,
exactly. So these guys, I started getting coaching from these guys. Actually, Tom Ferry sells coaching for real estate agents. But I said I was a real estate agent, and I started getting coaching from him. Not from him directly, but from his coaching firm. And I got a coach, and I told him my situation. I said that I actually was trying to get into the real estate business, and this guy started coaching me, telling me how to formulate a yearly business plan, how to get channels, sales channels, how to prospect, and it actually they gave me some golden nuggets that I would have never thought about if it wasn't for them. They obviously coached me on the simple things like your website, for example. It has to look good, you know, keep it alive, have a blog in your website, you know. But in addition to that, they gave me tips that were invaluable for me. I don't know if I'm actually going to tell you anything that you haven't heard in your podcast after 200 episodes, but I'm more focused on interpreting more than translation. And interpreting is I always tell my clients that think of us as if you're planning your wedding. You're not hiring your waiters, you are hiring your band, the band that will play in your event, you know. That's what you have to think about. What band do you want to play, do you want playing in your wedding, you know? That's what interpreters do for you in your conference, you know. So
you learn sales. How did you get out of your how did you manage to get out of your recession? And did you have savings or
how? Oh, no, that obviously, yeah, I had to survive on my savings. In fact, I had to invest because first thing they told me, you have to have a portfolio. You have to, Gary Waldron told me that I had to have a portfolio. There's no way you can sell if you don't have a portfolio to show, you know? So I started getting videos of the events that I did, and I posted them online, and I that started having a big effect. It made sales easier when I had this portfolio, you know. And the other thing that helped me a lot was trade shows. I started going to trade shows. Not only in my city, but in all Mexico, and not only about the tourism industry, but other industries that I knew were related to tourism, to tourism, and to that they required simultaneous interpreting in their events, you know. And for some of them, I negotiated trades, you know. I give you interpreting, you give me a booth. In some others, I had to pay to be there. So I had to invest, as I said. But suddenly, and the other thing that was pretty important that specifically changed my business, as I said, Mexico is a very centralized country. So at least online, we presented ourselves as a company based in Mexico City. This is a company that is based in Veracruz, is only used for events in Veracruz. A company that is based in Cancun is only used for events in Cancun. So, but a company based in Mexico City is used for events everywhere. Don't ask me why. This is.
But did you move to Mexico City then, or did you just say that your business is in Mexico City?
No, this is something. Don't tell my clients, but we just say we're in Mexico City. We have a Mexico City address. We have a Mexico City phone number.
Okay.
And we obviously do our events in Mexico City, but actually our events, it's 60% in the entire country and 40% in Mexico City. Okay. So actually it doesn't matter. In fact, not even for translation, because very rarely do I meet with my clients for translation, just for signing contracts, I think. Yeah. You know, nowadays we live in an era where we can, well, you're in the United States, I think. I'm in Veracruz, Mexico, and we're talking as if we are face to face. So right now it's not necessary to be based anywhere to do business there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of handling things online in a way that you can cater to that audience, to those clients that psychologically for them, you have to be in their city, even though you're not. Mm. And in case there's a meeting with them, I can go, but that's it.
Yeah.
You know?
So you took the sales coaching and you created a portfolio and have a website. How long did it take to get your business back on its feet then?
Surprisingly fast, 1 year.
Okay.
1 year later, we had two or three events a month.
Mm-hmm.
I was handling, I was having more events than I could handle myself. So I started working with other interpreters and it was very rewarding. It was very rewarding to see how, after actually going almost broke,
mm-hmm.
I bounced back and it was thanks to these guys, you know, thanks to the information that I had from the events that I interpreted, you know.
Mm-hmm. So what was the most important thing you did? What had the biggest effect to you obviously started marketing yourself, but did you do outreach too, or did people just find you?
No. The biggest effect was trade shows. The book fair in Mexico, in Guadalajara, for example,
mm-hmm.
Oil and gas trade shows.
So you would have a booth there?
Yes, I have a booth there, simultaneous interpreting. And
wasn't that very expensive to have a booth?
As I said, what I did was exchange agreements.
Okay. Okay.
So I gave them interpreting for their event.
Mm-hmm.
That mitigated my cost. So I was able to have a booth in those events. Some other events, I had to pay for the booth, mm-hmm. small booths.
Mm-hmm.
And in others, I just appeared at the event and started giving business cards to the booths that I thought would appreciate our work. For example, I approached the people from Shell in an oil and gas event,
mm-hmm.
and we actually started doing business with them later. NACE, the National Association of Corrosion Engineers, I also met in a trade show,
mm-hmm.
and I started working for them thanks to just saying hi and giving them a business card and showing them my videos on my iPad,
mm-hmm.
and that got us. They do seminars all the time in Mexico to certify corrosion engineers in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They bring people that don't speak Spanish to teach them. So here we are, and they not also do the seminar, but also they give us the materials for the seminar, which is
Okay. That sounds great. And you've been very lucky to bring your business back quite fast, or not lucky, but you've learned a lot. So what great tips do you have, or what would you recommend to other translators or interpreters when they ask how to protect their business and survive a recession? Is there anything they can do in advance?
Oh, yeah, of course. First of all, never think your word of mouth business is bulletproof. That's mm-hmm. Or your business is bulletproof. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You never have enough channels. That's immensely important.
Always keep marketing.
Oh, yeah. Always keep marketing, and always, I think, you know, coaching has become a word that is not very welcome, at least here in Mexico, you know, mm-hmm. Because they've turned it into something more like yoga or things like that. But no, if you get a good business coach, someone that can actually tell you what to do, is like a, He's like a business psychologist mm-hmm. that will, sometimes you don't know what's your next step. Mm-hmm. And they always give you this next step to take.
So you recommend to have a business coach if you can afford it?
Mm-hmm. Immensely. If you can afford it, yes. And there are some that are very affordable, and there are some that are better, there are some that are worse. And the best part is they don't have to be from the translation industry. Mm-hmm. They can be from any industry that relies on freelancing, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because we actually have very similar ways to market our services.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Actually, my husband says that I should have this podcast for freelancers, because the same marketing tips goes for all freelancers.
Oh, yeah, you should.
I just kind of know my market so well, so I stick to my linguists, but
you know,
maybe I shouldn't.
There's something that I wanted to discuss with you. I actually read your book, mm-hmm. and many translators recommend specialization, you know, mm-hmm. as a way to strengthen your business. Mm-hmm. And I actually disagree, you know. I think specialization may limit your... I think specialization may make you fearful of taking jobs that will make you grow as a translator or as an interpreter, you know. Projects that you would take if you weren't specializing on something, you know? Yes, maybe in perception wise, it may be good to specialize. And I mean perception from our clients. But mm-hmm. from our side, I think we have to work on everything. We have to try to expand our business as much as we can, you know.
And I think that's the difference between interpreters and translators too, because I think interpreters are less specialized because they can't be. But I use specialization as a marketing tool too, because as a working into a small language. To find clients that need my services, I can't just throw out, like, contact everybody. It's easier if I focus on a particular niche that I know that I'm already good at.
Yeah. That's when you're, well, I also work sometimes. I market myself as CABI intérpretes y traductores. That's CABI interpreters and translators. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when there's a project that I don't think I have the sufficient specialization to do, mm-hmm. or I need more people, I actually get, for example, right now we're negotiating the first screening of Roma, you know, the movie Roma by Alfonso Cuarón.
Mm-hmm.
The first screening of Roma interpreted into Nahuatl for indigenous peoples. And this is the first and last time it will be done because the rights for the movie are up actually very soon. The movie will only be available in Netflix very soon.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having Nahuatl interpreters to do the interpreting for people that only speak Nahuatl. They don't speak Spanish.
Mm.
And they will be able to watch the movie interpreted into their own language.
Mm.
And that's something that I actually don't market. I don't, I'm not, obviously, I don't know Nahuatl, but because of my job, well, I know many people, and one of them is Christina Kleinert. She's very knowledgeable in indigenous cultures, and her PhD is actually about that.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows a lot of interpreters that work on that, so that's what we're doing.
Good. All right.
Yeah.
What if you to recommend to other translators and interpreters is to prepare, and your biggest tip for that is to hire a coach.
Yeah, mostly it's my biggest tip would be go to trade shows.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think about that. Always think about also a very big pitfall is commoditization. Most companies sell technology. They don't sell people. They sell the translation devices.
Mm-hmm.
They sell the booths, but they don't sell the interpreters.
Mm-hmm.
We do the other way around. We sell the interpreters. We don't sell the technology. The technology is just a tool we use to do our job, you know? And also something that I haven't seen, freelancers don't have a portfolio. There must be a portfolio that you have in some shape or form,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
that you can show your clients. So mm-hmm. once they see it, your negotiation reduces to price, you know.
Okay. Those are some great tips. Thank you so much, Mario. Where can people find out more about you?
Well, my website of my company, it's a little difficult to spell because it's, actually, we did it 20 years ago. It was in Spanish. So it's capacitacionbilingue.com.
Okay. But we will, of course, put the link in the show notes.
You'll have it in your link.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can find me in my YouTube channel also, Gabi Interpretes y Traductores.
Okay.
We
will also link to that. So,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. So people can check you out, especially your portfolio.
Exactly.
So thank you for your valuable tips. And it's great to hear from someone with this experience. The best time to deal with a recession is in advance, of course, but it's hard to do. In a previous episode, I interviewed Jill Summer about having a contingency plan and to prepare for disaster. But we should also be prepared for a recession and have savings and a plan. Now over to the listeners. Do you have a plan, or have you prepared for if you suddenly would lose a lot of income, or if there's a big recession and your clients disappeared? Please share your insights or your what you have done in the show notes. There you can also check out the links to other resources and to Mario's website and our sponsors. And you can also share the episode with a colleague. So thank you again, Mario, and thank you to the listeners. Have a great week and see you in the next episode. Thank you for listening to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you found some good tips to apply to your freelance career. If you did, a great way to show this is by leaving a review on your favorite podcast listening app or to share the episode with other colleagues. Do you have a topic, question, or a guest you would like to hear about here? Send me an email to podcast@marketingtipsfortranslators.com.